All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool. And Jonathan, we have a special guest here with us on the podcast. And if you're watching on the YouTubes or you're watching on the website later, Daniel's here with us.
Say hello, Daniel. Daniel Chan. Yeah. Say hello, Daniel.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan, and thank you, Sean.
Yeah. Give you a little applause there.
Yeah.
So we're going to tell, here's a nice little teaser. We're going to talk about why our guest today left Silicon Valley to become a magician.
Yeah, and not just any Silicon Valley, not just like the area, like you actually worked in a pretty well-known tech company.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right alongside Mr. Musk and Mr. Thiel.
Yeah. Yep. So we're going to talk about magic. We talked about this a little bit on the last episode. We're going to get into a little bit more of it. And just from what we've been seeing in the pre-show, Jonathan, I think people are going to want to go to our website, Persuasion by the Pint, and definitely watch the video after this show is over.
Yes.
Sure. There's going to be some cool stuff visually that you may not pick up on the podcast, but we'll try to keep you up to date on the podcast as well.
Yep.
But before we do that, we're going to talk a little beer.
A little beer.
A little All beer. Right. So Daniel, you're the guest. So we're going to let you go first and tell us what beverage you're having here on the show.
It's a beer, but it's
Persuasion by the Pint.
it's got
nice
beer
cold
in it.
Beer.
Look at that.
Root beer, that is.
Root beer.
Got to get my goals done.
Yeah, what brand is that? Looks like a fancy root beer.
Yeah, it's a gourmet soda, drought style head, Henry Weinhardt's.
That's not your A&W root beer right
that's
there.
Fancy that's fancy root beer there.
That's Henry
good,
what?
Good stuff.
Henry who? Right see the is that the Fox News guy? Henry.
Does that show up there?
Did you say Weinhardt?
Yeah.
Weinhardt's. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Dashing looking man there on the label. So
yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I love a good root beer, no doubt. But I'm going to go a little more alcoholic. So
a touch more.
I've got a touch more. So I've got one of my favorite brands being here in Texas. So I'm going to another Shiner, but this is a new Shiner, and the label kind of, as we're recording this, it's Valentine's Day.
Yep.
My wife is downstairs in the kitchen slaving away cooking Valentine's dinner, by the way.
Oh, wow. Nice. Nice work.
Yeah. So shrimp and some other cool stuff. I don't know what else. But anyway, this is a Shiner Dark Cherry.
Ah, okay.
So it's their Bohemian Lager, their dark lager with a hint of cherry in it. It comes in at about a 7.5 ABV. It's got a very like Valentine, dark Valentine's, which, the whole story of St. Valentine's is pretty dark. So
sure. Yeah. You know,
this kind of fits that theme if you ask me.
So that's a limited, I would say it's only limited for this month.
I don't know. This is the first time I've saw it. I went to a new store here in town, and this is the first time I've seen it. So maybe it's just a February thing, or I don't know.
But, looks like it. I mean, based on the labels, the labeling, it looks like it's probably just a February thing.
So it's not like dark, but it's, again, it's a lager, but it's like a cherry lager. So
cherry lager.
So it's not super dark. You can still kind of get that amber see-through look to it. What do you got going on, Jonathan?
So I'm bringing a something I'm not very familiar with. This is a Schwarz beer.
Can you say it? It's so Schwarz unfamiliar.
I don't even. Yeah, Schwarz. It's this is from Wiseacre. It's a Starless Schwarz beer. So I didn't know what a Schwarz beer was, and I actually had to go look it up. So. It is a black or a dark lager that originated in Germany. Very similar to a stout in that they are made from roasted malt. It's predominantly a German beer with hints of coffee and chocolate. So I don't know what the big difference is between this and a stout. Other than
you're about to find out.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I mean, so this is new to me, although Wiseacre, I tend to like, you know, we've had some of their beers on in the past and they've been pretty good. So they're right out of Memphis, Tennessee.
And so cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, Daniel.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right.
Oh, wow. That is really, mine is really good.
Okay.
That's like a cherry cordial. Perfect for Valentine's Day. I may have to run back out and get some more of that.
Wow. That's a ringing endorsement there.
So. Yeah. Or I'll call an Uber because I've had a few already. So
how's your root beer there, Daniel?
It's awesome. Good
stuff. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And how was yours, Jonathan?
It was okay. It's not, not as good as the last one, the Scottish Ale that I had on the last episode. So
yeah, that one it's quite was a switch better. Going from
yeah, Scotland to Germany. Yeah.
Should have reversed the order on those probably.
Exactly. Exactly. So. But, right. But it's good. All is well, it's good. And, what I'm excited about is our guest today.
Absolutely.
I'm going to pull up the notes here because I've got a little background. We're going to be posting this article from BuzzFeed. Daniel sent me. It says, meet Silicon Valley's favorite magician. Daniel Chan will steal your smartwatch and break into your iPhone using some old-fashioned sleight of hand. So
I like it.
I like that.
So, yeah. That accompany video got 14,000 views in about 3 days. It has about 25,000 views, just that video alone.
That's sweet.
That article's been helped me go to the next level of corporate entertainment. I've worked for every company from A to Z, from Airbnb to Zillow. It's been an amazing journey. I actually checked everything off on a list systematically. Uh-huh. And as a part of goal setting, I had to persuade a lot of people to hire me.
Yes. So, right. Did you literally get a company for every letter in the alphabet, or is that
pretty much every single one?
Wow!
Want me to name one letter, and I'll just
you'll throw it out.
Go for it.
Q.
Quora.
Ah.
Yeah, buyout.
Z.
Nice.
Zillow.
He said Zillow already.
Okay. Attention,
Jonathan.
Mr. Zuckerberg.
Yes.
Zucker. Oh man.
W.
Okay. Yeah.
Wells Fargo.
Wow. I like it. So that's I'm satisfied. Because of,
let me guess. Is you Uber?
U.S. Marine Corps, okay. United States Coast Guard, and quite a few other U's.
Okay,
I've got quite a few. Of them. United Airlines.
Yeah.
And, wow. Several universities.
You've been busy for sure.
I'd like to see you steal like somebody's Uber. You know, that would be cool.
Make it disappear.
I want to go to the White House and like pick pockets at the White House. That's my goal.
That may not end up well for you.
No,
unless you're invited.
Exactly.
My friend Apollo Robbins, who was on the TED Talks, he pickpocketed the Secret Service of I think Gerald Ford.
Oh, nice.
Or wow. some ex Jimmy Carter, I think Jimmy Carter.
One of those old guys, right?
I mean, yeah, one of those ex presidents. Yeah. See, I'm going to go. Jonathan,
yeah. We're going to let Jonathan introduce you and we'll get back to our banter here. But
yeah, because
we want the people to know who they're dealing with right now.
Absolutely. So I want you to share because Daniel used to work at PayPal back in the day. He had just to tell you before he became a full-time magician, he was a pre-ISPO Silicon Valley employee, worked alongside Elon Musk and Peter Thiel at PayPal, along with doing some side hustling magic and doing a little pickpocketing, fire juggling, and some other things along the way. So he had vested 13 months of stock options when he left to pursue his dream of performing magic. So Daniel, I'm going to let you kind of introduce your background because you got quite a story to tell, you leaving kind of the corporate, offices there in Silicon Valley and deciding to kind of go your own route and, choosing this field. So why don't you kind of give us some background before we get into, some of the questions and some of the fun stuff we're going to be doing.
Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco, went to, Zion Lutheran and was really picked on hard when I was younger. And that's very common with a lot of magicians. They get picked on and they're a little bit more introverted and they use the magic as a bridge or some use it as a crutch and continue to use it as a crutch. I used it as a bridge to get through that period. Mm-hmm. But I also went to a magnet school called Lowell High School and I wouldn't really care I'd be happy just getting, knowing the subject, and I didn't care if I were to get straight A's. Mm-hmm. But when I was at school, I would learn things like those one-handed cuts, and I would just practice them under the table while the teacher was talking. And from that point on, I had a lot of fun jobs. I was a ski instructor, snowboarding instructor. I worked at summer camps from Godero Camp, Santa Monica YMCA Camp Big Bear, Campus by the Sea. And I taught a lot of different sports and activities. I used to be ripped, but now I'm trying to get back there. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I just knew what was hot. I knew what spoke to people.
Yeah.
I knew what it was to jump on a bandwagon and the tribe of winners. And mm-hmm. when PayPal came out, I knew they were going to be something because of the $5 referral fee. And I knew that they had a huge war chest of money backing them. So mm-hmm. I just said, I'm going to get a job in there. And I had a customer service job. The first week we were at University Avenue. This is for all the Bay Area people, just to give them perspective. University Avenue, the guy signs me up. He says, oh, you're a magician. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to show you some magic tricks. He asked me, can you show me some magic tricks during the interview? Once that happened, the whole interview was just magic tricks. Then they call everyone. When I'm done with the interview, they call in other people. And they're like, come on over. This guy's great. He's doing some magic. He's going to be hired in our customer service. The only thing he needed to know that was I had the soft skills mm-hmm. and the people skills. Mm-hmm. Next week, I signed the contract, I think on a Friday. Next week, we moved to Embarcadero offices. And then I see Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Ken Howery, who's now the ambassador to Sweden. I see all these people who are going to eventually found YouTube and Yelp and all these other great companies. And I was amongst greatness, but I knew my greatness wasn't there. And I wanted to carve a path for myself. Mm-hmm. So
you stepped out of that world to go, well, not completely out, because you still do the shows for them. Or what do you call it, a show? Or I mean, what do you call what you do now? How would you describe what you do day to day now?
To differentiate myself, it's an experience. Okay. And when you see it, you'll see the energy. You'll see it's like none other. You know, if people are going to hire me versus another magician, they're going to be like, hey, what's different? So you have to define everything to your customers from the positioning. Dan Chan, the magic man. Dan Chan is a rhyme. Magic man is an alliteration. Rhymes and alliteration are hypnotic. Then I transitioned to Dan Chan, master magician. Master magician sounds a lot cooler. It's not as catchy, but you'll probably bill more for it because of the title. It's not like a kid's thing. Then I went to Dan Chan, billionaire's magician, because once I started performing for billionaires regularly, I wanted to sell tickets. I needed them through that funnel, and I wanted people driving 3-4 hours, even people flying from across the country to see me perform. They'd hear about something legendary, and then I wanted to show them something legendary and deliver that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's our last guest, who's kind of in the business like you, he said, you know, everything communicates.
Yeah.
And like you just said, your name, as you grow, you might need to change that name. And as a copywriter, like, I love the alliteration and the rhyming and all that stuff. And those subtle tweaks, you know, in branding and titles, man, they make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That cadence also sells.
Yeah.
Cadence.
Yeah,
when you're getting someone in the flow of something. I have a very, very interesting story that I'm going to tangent from. My friend R. Paul Wilson has this interview in Interpreting Magic by David Rigo. And this is an amazing book. It has interviews from some of the top magicians, but he is on the television show, The Real Hustle. Sorry, I'm not looking at the camera, but mm-hmm. he says he was a television consultant, and they'd set up a van filled with crappy merchandise and boxes. And then they would have all this garbage, and they'd set up a pitch and they'd drive into an open market. Then they would ask, how much would you pay for this? £5? You can get it for £5, but I guarantee you'd be satisfied. I guarantee you'd be happy. Okay, so put your hands up. Who's happy? Who's satisfied? And because it's such a low price point, people would say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Say, I'm happy, you're happy. In fact, let's do this. Let's give them all their money back. And then they'd pull out 20 pots and pans, and they'd do this nice 20 pens. And there'd be, it's like a Christmas set. How much would you pay for that? Think of that if you went to a department store, a silver pen. We could easily give you 5 or 10 pounds for get 5 or 10 pounds for this. Mm-hmm. But this whole set is 5 pounds. Who wants this for 5 pounds? And they would have it showed up. They'd have people in the audience doing it. So mm-hmm. they would get massive social proof. Mm-hmm. So remember, I guarantee you'll be satisfied. I guarantee you'll be happy. And a minute later, they give their money back again. So they go into the next one. They go in and they give out one other thing with Italian glass or special promotion. There's where we get all the bargains, and they do this kind of persuasion thing. Mm-hmm. And they build a huge crowd, 10 pounds. Remember, we're going to guarantee you're happy. And they're hyping up the crowd. And then they give the money back. And it's like, holy mother of God, you know, they do this and you're setting a pattern. So then the last item is like a vase or something slightly bigger. And they're like, they say, you know, they do that hype. They hype it up. It's like QVC. They do the right. exact same thing. And they say, who's happy? We're happy. Ooh, I'm happy too. Thank you. And then they close the door of the truck and they drive off and they don't give the money back. So they repeat this pattern. But the point is in this book, everyone sees that pattern and everyone thinks that they're going to get rich off this. Mm-hmm. So they go in and they give the money back. And everyone kind of does that, and they do that repeat cycle. But it's kind of like a Ponzi scheme. It just has to end somewhere.
Mm-hmm, right.
But when we think about persuasion, we think of something like that. But I try to let people know it's not like that. Mm-hmm. There are ways to do this, but this is how people have done this in the past. And this is, and if you think about that, the ethics behind this, you've really convinced someone to do something that they were not about to do. Sure. They spend a dollar, they got their money back. You ask them and they say yes to it. And then they say yes. And it's a yes close. You keep on getting them to say yes on the small things. And then later on, they say yes to something else that's a little bit bigger.
Sure.
Right. And that is worth the price of that pint right here.
So tell us some of the, I'm just curious, cause you talk about, I was reading the article that you sent me, and you, you kind of take a little pride in baffling some of the, a lot of these tech engineers. And, from my standpoint, I work around a lot of engineers, and I know the characteristics of, you talk about software engineers. I work around a lot of, engineers that really don't have a sense of humor. So they try to figure things out. You know, they're kind of their own unique, they have their own unique personality. So
you're being very nice.
You know, it's funny. Like, it's a lot of it's culture based because yeah. your parents are pushing you so hard. Like, I'm Asian. So I'm going to go down that route and say, mm-hmm. you know, as Asians, you got to tell your kids to do other things.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you're Asian?
Don't have fun. Yeah. A Dan Chan. didn't the last name give it away, the accent?
I was trying to figure that out. I was like, oh, okay.
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. So the thing is, you know, like when you're performing for Asian audiences, they're sometimes stiff. So you have to, they're very analytical as well. They sure. don't want to be tricked. They don't understand the culture of theater. Mm-hmm. And that's why I do the other events for the Asian community, because I want to show them that there's something. And then I also educate them because they're just trying to bust your freaking balls.
Yeah.
They are trying to bust your balls on saying, hey, I know how this works. And then you either have to
change it up
politely, give them a culture thing, or just kind of smack them around verbally a little bit in order to, for them to shut up. Otherwise it becomes out of control. You right. just have to lay down the law, uh-huh. Give them a warning shot a couple of times. Uh-huh. And that's how you deal with hecklers.
So what is your like number one icebreaker when you're with a tough crowd, or you know, if you were doing a sales presentation in front of a tough crowd, like what's like your number one icebreaker? How do you get people's attention? So they're like, oh, this guy's different. I want to listen to him now.
I have an icebreaker for every single different situation because I'm okay. prolific. I've done over 5,000 plus shows, 250 shows a year, plus sometimes 45 shows in a month. Check this out right here. If you're online on if you're listening to this, I'm showing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 $1 bills front and back. I typically have them to hold on to the bills, look at them, and then I'll blow and I'll change it into real 20, 40, 60, 80, nice. 100, real $100 bills with security strip, watermark.
Man, you're like, the Federal Reserve. That's amazing. I'm
better than the Federal Reserve. Don't tell them that. And then I ask everyone, when I used to do kid shows, who wants a $100 bill? Who wants it? And I get them all hyped up. Then stay in school because no one's ever going to give you anything in life. So you better get used to it. Or you better work hard.
That's great.
I love that. The takeaway.
So did you just do some redirection there or some misdirection? Is that why we were fooled? Is that misdirection?
I'm going to be selling that in my course. It's going to be $19.95 a month, reoccurring billing monthly.
I like it.
I haven't started a course, but I'm willing to give up some of my stuff because I want to move on. Magic has treated me so well. Last week I was performing at a party with Thomas Keller. I was at Pebble Beach on the 18th hole in a private residence, and they had alligators there. Another party we had Bengal tigers in a cage in some guy's house in Woodside Atherton. So these are over the top epic parties.
Wow.
Yeah. So you said you're moving on. What's kind of your next thing? We'll get back to your magic, but I'm curious since you threw it out there, like
I'm going to find investors and I'm going to build up a little magic castle in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have people come to me so I can create a better show. I'm going to have an army of magicians work for me in the Bay Area and around the world. I'm recruiting people. I'm teaching them my system where anyone in any major metropolitan city will be able to make $250 to $300 an hour at a kid show and up to, you know, $100,000 as a corporate entertainer. Mm-hmm. The corporate entertainers make anywhere from $1,000 to $100,000 an evening.
Yeah.
If you have the right positioning and if you have the right mindset and if you understand how to sell it and how to create value that no one else creates. And that's what I'm going to do for you right now. I'm going to tip you something about getting people to see things in a different perspective. So Jonathan, let me ask you one thing right here. This right here, for those who are listening, is a bottle of water. Mm-hmm. How much would you pay for this bottle of water right here?
$1.35.
Okay. So pricing is based on perspective and position. If it was an Evian bottle of water or one of those other fancier bottles, you could definitely see it at $5 at a Walgreens. But if you were at a resort, you'd probably see it for up to $10. Yep. Yeah. That fair? But if we were in a desert, this here would be worth $1,000 if necessary. If you were thirsty, you'd pay $1,000 for it because that's life to you. Yeah.
Sure.
But I'm going to transform the way that you think. And this is a very visual thing. For those of you listening, follow on because there is a payoff. If I were to tell you right now that this is easily worth over $2,000 right here, would you give me $500 right now?
If it were worth how much?
If I just told you it were worth $2,000, would you give me $500 for that right now? Venmo that to me right now, Jonathan.
No.
Yeah, it made you think. You wouldn't think so, but I'm telling you that that's there.
Right.
But you don't see that gold in there. So what I'm going to show you right now is exactly what it's worth.
Okay.
I just opened up the water bottle. There is well over $2,000 in here.
Stupid.
Don't.
You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right, can you reverse that? Give me one more shot.
Right here. Yeah. So
for those of you listening, let me. Well, just go to the video and watch on our website, persuasionbythepine.com. I'm not going to tell you. You got to go watch it.
That's right.
And have you seen a transformation mechanism like that before?
No.
So those are what a lot of closers use. Techniques like that to sell. And these are underground techniques that I've gathered over the years studying with the best of the best.
Yeah.
I've paid for the $7,500, $10,000 coachings to learn techniques like that.
Sure.
So I could close coaching clients that I would say, hey, I'm going to teach you things that no one else will teach you.
Right.
And I had, when I gave up my first business, I used to have a business model of magic juggling and balloon twisting. And I said to a guy, hey, if you do it this way, magic and balloons, you'd make a fortune. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I laid him out the price point, did a competitor analysis, did Porter's Five Forces. I did a SWOT analysis with him, strength, weakness, opportunity, and threats. And then, and this is all stuff that I did not make up. It's all in business school 101.
Sure.
And I used all these principles, but I put it in a very systematic way, in a systematic order that was very simple and easy to follow. If you make things simple and easy to follow, people will buy into you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's something about magic tricks, and I actually had a couple things. When I used to live over where Jonathan does in Knoxville, you know, Gatlinburg was not far away, Pigeon Forge, and it's kind of like Branson, Missouri, if you're familiar with that, Daniel. There's a couple magic houses, right?
Yes.
And one of the places I went to, you know, in the lobby, he has his gift shop where you can buy different tricks.
I went to that gentleman. What's his name in Branson? I flew out there to do a gig 2 years ago, close to Christmas evening or Christmas Eve.
The one I went to was in Gatlinburg, so I'm not sure, or Pigeon Forge, so I can't remember his name. But I remember I bought like a coloring book. He had this rope that was like, you know, you could make it go, it was stiff or go limp, you know, that type of thing. And I use those in some of my sales presentations. And you said earlier, before the call started, that if you can, you know, if you do some of these magic tricks for people, if you can get them to laugh or you can get people to, you know, enjoy a trick like that, you can sell them. Mm-hmm. And what you just showed, man, I can like already see what you did to Jonathan. Like I could absolutely see using that in a video sales letter, in an enrollment call, because it shows people that they're not seeing everything they think they're seeing, or like there's a lot of analogies or metaphors you could put with that.
And a lot of people, when they're doing magic tricks, they're doing tricks. There's no story and there's no authenticity to what they're doing. So that's the reason why you think, oh, magician. I don't label myself as purely magician. I'm a magician, mentor, and marketer. Or I add something to it. Because if I'm just saying I'm a magician, I'm competing with all the other magicians who are charging X amount. And I want 10X or 100X. Mm-hmm. So I use them as transformation mechanisms, and everything I do comes from the heart. And that's the way that you sell, is selling from the heart and believing in it and knowing that you have something different of value. Mm-hmm. So this is my 12-year-old son. He is amazing. He juggles 3, 4, and 5 balls, 3 flaming torches. He's been on Kids Say the Darndest Things and a couple other things. So James is going to show you'll have to go to Persuasion by the Pint to see this, because this is going to be pretty amazing. James is going to hold his finger right here. Can you put your hand, reach around this way? And we're going to show this to you. And I'm going to give you a very cool presentation. Okay. You see this $2 bill.
It's not real.
Right. It's real. I made a hole in it. That is a real dollar bill, a $2 bill.
Yes.
Okay.
A real $2 bill.
And you see the, give me your 100. I'll cut a hole into it.
Okay.
I only use the real thing. And you'll notice that this has fiber, so it lasts a lot longer. So if you were to do this with something, use a real one. Don't use a fake one.
Yeah.
It just costs you $2. You can tape it back up and spend it later. Mm-hmm. If you use a fake one, you will be arrested. I mean, right there, you can see that very visual. Visual really sells, because video sells. Yep. Instagram sells right there. The front of the bill faces me. The back of the bill faces you. In any situation, you want people to see the other side. But quite often, people are holding onto their opinions and beliefs a little too tightly. Mm-hmm. So they can't see anything else and they can't change their perspective. But as a magician, a speaker, a mentor, you can just get people to transform the way they see things, even without James letting go. The front of the bill now faces you, the back faces me, and you've never let go.
Right.
And that there is something that I created. Mm-hmm. And I have hundreds of these things that I use to enable salespeople, like high-tech salespeople. They have to sell, and their main thing is a wait job. They just have to show up, wait, and relax and sell what they have. And you just need to warm people up, and you want them to become your friend. And that only means spending time with them and being there for them. Mm-hmm. And things like this, I have hundreds of things like this that are quote bar tricks, but I put a real good spin on it. For example, that my son was about to show that to you, but he had this rubber band, and it's called the boomerang rubber band. He'll shoot a rubber band 20, 25 feet out of his hand. It'll touch the floor and it'll come back. And people think it's strings or magnets or nanotechnology or all these gadgets, but we tell you what it is. It is simply applying backspin onto the rubber band, it touching the floor, gaining traction, and zooming right back. I do this on the streets. I do that on the streets or on the trade show. And all these people on the trade shows are giving away back in the 80s and 90s, huge Hummers and cars. And I'm giving away $100 bills for my client every hour. And I'm helping them save a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Because my clients might have a 10 by 10 trade show, a floor print with, you know, in Moscone Center, it costs $20,000, $20,000 to $40,000 for a 10 by 10 booth for 3 days. When they have that as an investment and they're just going to hire a magician who has very little social skills that doesn't know when to wait for people to come in that doesn't have the soft skills, then of course they're going to only want to pay $250 an hour or something like that. But if they're hiring someone who can leverage the crowds all around, the guy who's just given away the Hummer, then afterwards saying, thank you very much for watching that, can give them a big round of applause. And as they come in, come on over here, we have a chance for you to win. And then you do that spiel where I've changed the ones into 20s or hundreds. Mm-hmm. And then we give that away as a part of the client. Imagine how, it's not about how much space you have on that trade show floor. Mm-hmm. It's about how much leverage you have and return on investment. So I'm trying to give my clients, I tell them, save the money. A lot of my larger clients will, after the first year hiring me on a trade show floor, I'll say, use a smaller one. We'll make it even look more packed. Just put your budget toward a couple of the giveaways. And they give me 2-3x what I was charging in the past because they see the value of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. With the last trade show client I did, they were so adamant about not paying a big budget. I think they said it was $800 or $1,000. And for 3 hours or something like that. And they said, we're really stuck on a budget. And I said to them, you know, I will work with you, but the next time I work with you, I'm going to be asking you for stock options. Mm-hmm. You'll find it so valuable that you're going to call me back. They have not called me back yet, but when I finished, they sent me a thank you letter. Yeah. And I have it, I got the CEO, Aaron Levine of Box, and of the CEO of Box for the trade show BoxWorks to say the company's name, mm-hmm. my company's name, yeah. This small footprint, really small thing. I got it all on video and it's and he's a billionaire. I think he's worth a lot. Just look up CEO of Box. I posted this on my website. They sent me $1,000 check after I was done, mm-hmm. double my performance fee. As a result of giving them value and guaranteeing what I did, because I could have said, no, my normal trade show fee is $25,000 minimum fee, but I knew that I could over deliver. And if they didn't have the budget, they would at least be thankful for it. I over delivered in terms of value, but I set up the framing so that the next time, if they were to call me, because I knew they were a pre-IPO company, mm-hmm. I have to set myself up, but that's hard work. It's a lot more work than you think it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
To build that up and to get them to get in that mindset. But when you tell your client something like that, if you frame it in the right way, you might get that $1,000 tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. So Daniel, I've got a question rattling around in my head. I want to get answered. And so do you think that magic and the tricks you do and the way you weave them with stories. What is it about that that is so effective? Is it the entertainment value? Is it that their like sales defenses, so to speak, are down because they think they're watching a show, so they're more receptive to the stories? There's not this, you know, block. What do you think makes that so effective, weaving the magic with the story or the point that you're trying to get across? What's going on, like, from a persuasion standpoint, do you think, to make that work?
Okay, first thing, it's unique. It's like hiring a juggler or anything. You can get people through the booth. But the second thing is they know it's authentic, because that message that resonates with me, I know it's going to resonate with people who think like me.
Okay.
So they know that there's no BS. They know that I'm who I am without holding back. They can hear it in my voice and my energy.
Right.
So when I throw that out there, we've all been to those magic shows where we hide behind the fourth wall, as magicians or theater people call, we put up the fourth wall and you don't break that fourth wall. Breaking the fourth wall means going out to the audience and shaking their hands. But in this world of people competing and doing things and not connecting, and quite often a lot of people who are trying and struggling so much, they're not connecting with anyone. So when you connect with someone on a level, and if you come to me and I'm working with you as a sales coach or sales client, I'm finding out what your problems are and I'm asking true things and we're solving these problems together. So they know that I'm really in it for them. I'm not giving you just one turnkey thing. Sometimes I'll find something from a different industry. And that's why it's so important. Like what Warren Buffett says is to read from every industry. So I am writing all the time. I'm on Quora all the time. I'm honing my pitch and I'm learning from the best of the best. And that's how I'm solving these sales problems, because I'm becoming the best sales magician out there. The best connectors. Sometimes one of the interesting things is, when you go on a trade show, a lot of them are kind of like scammy. They'll throw off the $100 bills. When I'm doing that, I'm telling my client we have to give them away, because everyone else is doing this trick and they are, and no offense to any of them, because even my mentor did that. He would just fan out $5,000 and he would wave at people's face. That money would touch you on the head and you would see it. And how many of you have actually seen $5,000? Like live in cash? How often do you see that regularly? My mentor would fan that out and he would hit people with it. He would brush it on their face and he'd say, gather on in. Who wants to win $1,000? And you do this real trade show presentation. And I used to do that. But I realized that that's a 100% lie. Mm-hmm. He's not letting anyone win. So the company had no problems with that. They'd spend $5,000 for him to be there. I think when he left the trade show industry, he was making $25,000 per show. That's what billable rate was.
Yeah. And so he was pure entertainment.
But then there's a line that you cross where if you're hiring a guy who's saying we're going to give out money, but never giving it out, then to me, that's a disappointment.
Agreed.
So what I'd rather do is I would ask them, would you like to give away money? Or I would just figure, and I have a lot of these strategies that I came up with that I only give to my coaching clients because these are mine, or things that I've paid for, I've bought the rights to, and I will use those. And that uniqueness really takes a lot of thinking. Like guys that I look up to, I have studied all their work and I understand how they think. And the best thing about, if you're going to achieve a goal, you have to think about it as, what would this guy do? What would Mark Cuban do? What would Warren Buffett do? What would any of these guys that you look up to that you want to achieve their same type of success, what would they do? And then start doing what you think they would do based on the biographies that you have read. And that's how I started investing in one share of company of every company that hired me for, if they're a public company. I've invested in Chevron and I've looked at their company culture and I just put a little bit of money in it because it goes up and I'm like, oh, let me call the meeting planner because they're doing well. They're making a lot of money. So they're probably going to want to hire me. So understanding, getting your skin in the game, is something that I love to do, is finding out how something works, the thought process, how something works, and how why something ticks.
What's the most, I'm just curious, from all of the, all of these companies that you've worked with in Silicon Valley and so on, what's been one of the most interesting shows you've ever done for a company? Or what's one of the biggest, what's when one of the most, I would say the most, let's say the most challenging, because you work with a lot of engineers. So let's just say challenging. What would be the most challenging show that you've ever done?
Man, I've had a lot of failures, but and challenges, but now I can't even remember them, because every time I've gone through one of those, I write down and I document what happened and how I'm going to avoid it. And I figure out 10 outs. If that were to happen again, what would I do?
Yeah.
And the challenging things are a cell phone ringing, someone walking out, the head person being too drunk.
Yeah.
you have to, if there's so many strategies, throw out some weird scenario and we'll problem solve together. What do you think would be one of the weirdest scenarios that you'd come up with?
Well, drunk, somebody being drunk is pretty, that kind of throw me off.
It's okay, like some podcasts, so, I know, man. That's crazy.
I used to have all these heckler lines where I'd slam them down, and I have these subtle ways of kind of like implying that they're drunk.
Yeah.
And then I would say some things, and I don't even need them that much anymore, because I command the stage, and if I'm kind of talking a little bit faster than them, they're going to shut up.
Sure.
If they don't, I'll start doing a trick that everyone in the audience knows how it's working and they don't know it. And I have three tricks like that I can do.
Right.
So they're going to look the butt of this whole thing, and they're going to either shut up, or I'm going to continue to throw shit over the head.
Right.
It's called paper balls over the head.
Right.
So it's Slidini's trick. You ask them which hand, and then you start throwing it over the head. Believe it or not, once it gets past this point, they don't see it. So you're throwing it over the head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's old classic. If they keep on talking, I will just pick their pocket.
Yeah.
And flash it behind their head. So I have all this arsenal, and I will come up with something on the spot, because it was just come up. I don't even know what to say, but I'll just react in the moment.
Mm-hmm. So instead of like trying to, if I'm hearing you correctly, instead of like trying to ignore or deflect or put that person down, you'll actually bring them into the show. Is that what I'm hearing?
I will kind of challenge them depending on what their status is. If it's the CEO of the company, I'm going to let them win.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I can't throw stuff over the head because he's the head. Mm-hmm. But if the CEO's like, hey, shut this guy up.
Yeah.
And everyone looks like, hey, we're here to enjoy a show. I don't get hecklers anymore. Right. I used to the first 1,000 shows, because when you have gaps, people want to fill in. They want to be entertaining. But when you're entertaining them or provoking their thoughts, why would they want to heckle you when you're giving them a good show?
Sure.
When you suck, they're going to jump in and try to entertain themselves.
Right.
So a lot of magicians think, oh, I got hecklers. What do? Get a freaking show that does not suck.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a good tip for marketing as well. Like, you know, if there's some dead spots in your marketing or some dead spots in your sales letter or presentation, you're just inviting people to have to come up with objections or click out or whatever. So what you said, Daniel, is like, you know, you've done thousands of shows and you've tightened up and you've gotten better and better at it. And I think people underestimate the value and the need to practice and to just develop their craft over and over and over, get feedback. And it's a lot harder to do, I think, online a lot of times than it is in person live shows. Like I know when I sold in person, I learned a lot more, a lot faster, even though we have metrics and split testing tools online. There's something about the human interaction where you can learn so much faster. Do you agree with that?
Live feedback loop. And you can look at, like right now, if I'm distracted, you'll see me look down. Mm-hmm. You'll know I'm reading, or if you'll see a reason, because our body language will give something away. When you lean forward like this, you know that you're engaged, that you're really into it. And when you're typing something, we don't understand, first of all, when we're writing copy, we don't understand, like my biggest blind sight is grammar, and I've got so much running in my head that I don't realize that people don't understand me. And we are all in our own little world, and we don't know what our weakness is. And the ones that are very self-aware, like Mark Cuban, you can tell he's very self-aware.
Sure.
And he's calm and he's centered. So guys like that know how to transform the world, but they also understand a very unique competitive advantage. If you look at Mark Cuban's case study, he had the reason why he got so rich was because he had he sold his broadcast.com to Yahoo, but then he also knew that the stocks were going to drop, or he was very confident that it would. So then he also had he bought the leverage, the right to sell at a certain price so that he wouldn't be exposed to the drop that Yahoo is going to succumb to later. So there has to be us, first of all, being 360 aware. And the only time that you have to are 360 aware is if you find people who have complementary skills that, like my son and daughter, they can catch all my spelling grammatical mistakes. I'll look at them. I won't see it. And that's the role of a coach. And that's why I start coaching people, is I bring my son and daughter into coaching, and I help them. I get them to write copy and do other things because they do it just as well as I do, in terms of they don't have the energy, but they understand structure. And it's very important for them to see, oh, Dad, I don't understand this. Or you did this there. So it's always important to get a third eye. It's way better if you can see someone who's successful at it, doing it.
Sure.
Oh yeah. I know on my copy, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I don't see because in my brain it's one way, but the way it comes out on paper, I make some jumps in my brain that I just assume everybody else is going to make. So when I send it to a buddy, he's like, you lost me from here to here. And I'm like, really? Cause that's pretty clear to me, but that's cause it's, I don't realize there's a neural connection there from something in my past or a conversation I had, you know, with whoever, that I just assume everybody knows that. And it's an assumption that loses sales in copy because you're not, you know, you're, and that's easy to do especially the more seasoned you get in a field, the more you're likely to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially if you don't reflect or you don't take time out of that field, you will get in your own little echo chamber.
Or in absolutely.
The same echo chamber. So the best thing to prevent against that is to get a sixth or seventh grader to look at your copy. Not just a friend. You ask a seventh grader, ask it from different perspectives, ask about the logic, because they are growing up to become grownups. Sometimes when they understand all the industry terms, you're just writing gibberish, because if you understand the terms that I know, if you understand SWOT analysis, if you understand all these things so well, or if you've seen these things, you will not hire me. I'm worth more to someone else. Like if I were to sell us magic payment plans, it's the people who can't afford to hire me that I'm trying to target. And that's why I would set up a payment plan for them for 10 months or a certain amount of time. And anytime that they felt that they weren't getting value, they'd leave.
Yeah.
I would add that, but I'm getting people in from the ground floor because they don't have the bad habits other magicians have. Other magician will say, oh, this guy's doing this and he's only charging $250 and everyone's charging $250. Why the hell are you charging, you know, so much more? And I'm like, I have a secret. You don't know. I'm not going to tell you that secret until you give me this.
Exactly. You
know? Yeah. So it's the copy has to appeal to a fifth grade level. And that's why I think in politics, what's going on right now is if you look at, what's that guy's name? He has this great channel. And he says that when Trump is talking, it's literally at a sixth or seventh grade level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Scott Adams talks a lot about that. Mm-hmm.
Not just Scott Adams. There's another guy, but I'll look it up. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes. But most people are not studying. They're not pushing themselves. And when they're pushing themselves, they're pushing themselves in the wrong way.
Well, I'll tell you a great trick that I'll drop here, and then we'll probably need to wrap up pretty soon here. Taking your what you're talking about just a step further, like if you were to get your kids to read your copy out loud, you can actually see and hear where they stumble over phrasing and you can correct it. Like I literally will print out sometimes a piece of copy and hand it to my daughter or hand it to somebody else and watch them with my own copy, read it and then make notes wherever they kind of read a sentence twice or they start a sentence over. Cause there's something there that's unclear that's made them stumble. And this people will do that online or anywhere else. And it's a great little tool to listen to somebody else read your copy as opposed to even them having them like read it silently. It's a different experience than having them hear. Cause most people read copy out loud in their head if they're online reading a sales letter.
Yeah.
So you want to replicate that as much as possible when you're editing your copy.
Absolutely. That's a good one.
So and, that's my magic trick.
I mean, marketing is magic for most people because that is what allows us to put money on our food on our tables and money in the bank. The channel I think I'm referring to back to what I was talking about was Master Your Charisma, the Charisma on Command channel.
Oh, okay.
That is a very powerful.
That sounds very vaguely familiar with an episode we had. I think it was a couple episodes back on charisma, and
yeah, we'll have to get that person on.
Yeah,
he has, I think, 2 million followers.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
And he has 200 million, 200 million views, 292 million views. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of the videos he has have 265,000 views, 597,000 views. So it's good stuff. Yeah. He really does break down actors, actresses, and a lot of people who are top of industry. Things that
I've seen that. Yeah. He like does a lot of the why. I think I remember seeing one with like, he compared Chris Hemsworth to what's her name with the Avengers, Captain Marvel. What's her name? Can't remember her name. Starts with the B.
Liam or not. Bria.
The chick. Yeah, her.
Bria.
King Kong girl.
Bria Larson.
Captain Marvel. There you go. Bria Larson. Yeah, Bria. Yeah, he compared Larson. The difference between them and his, I think that's the guy. So that'd be cool. I'm sure he'd want to be on the show. So we'll reach out to him. But, well.
I got to read this part. This is really cool because I was in, this is one of the things I highlighted in the article.
Yeah.
Daniel. Yeah. It says, to win over tech clients, you often study the industry news, which I think is cool. That's, you know, crucial. You kind of get on board with what's going on within their industry. When you meet with executives, you often take a picture of their library and then you'll read a book or two from their shelf. So why do you do that? I'm just curious.
So there's commonalities, like there's a New York Times bestseller list and there's a lot of things, but I want to know what they're reading and what they're not reading. So if they're worth $1 billion and I see I work with billionaires and guys who are worth hundreds of millions and I show up in their house. And one time my daughter's like, I take her to this event doing a party at when I was still doing kid shows. And I was like, she asked me, is this a real fossil? I was like, no, it's not a real fossil probably. Then I walk past it a little bit further. There's a certificate and it says, this is a real fossil. It's certified. And I'm like, freak. Then I Google the guy's name and he's like the inventor of like something on the internet and it's patented. So he is worth, his net worth is way off the charts, but he just chooses to stay very private. And most of the times they'll either tell me to sign a non-disclosure or I get so close to them that they have me so many times that they don't care. I'm just, sure. They just trust my judgment in terms of what we're talking about. Right. But in any case, it's really important. Those topics.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so it's cool. It's kind of a rapport, but it's, I mean, would you say it's a just type of rapport building or?
You know, I like, I want to spend time with them afterwards. And if I'm going to, they hire me, I want to be cool to talk to. Like a lot of people say to me, Dan, I could introduce you to my friend. They see that I'm like a Renaissance person. I can talk about ski instruction and skydiving and flying planes and other things that I've done in the past. So it's being able to be the life of the party or at least relate. Oh, I spearfish and I catch lobsters with my bare hands with gloves on, of course, but you know, I'll do things like that. But when a billionaire will say, hey, Dan, you want to come with me to fishing? They'll be like, hey, you're a cool guy to hang out with. Yeah. And that's how you build the relationship because you just don't want to be like everyone else. You want to be like, hey, can you show up to our party? And that's where you're making that one extra connection. You're speaking their language and you can connect with them on any level. Mm-hmm. Like if I were to say, hey, I'm going to tie a bowline or I'm going to do something. So I'm studying their industry. I understand their business models. And a funny thing about it is I have insights from other companies. I give them a competitor analysis after I'm done on a lot of companies that have hired me. And I just will tell them, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And they're like, bam, lights go off in their head because they're like, wow, now you're the consultant. Mm-hmm. I mean, earlier I told you that I got $1,000 tip from someone. It's because all the business insight, I trained their salespeople. I told them a lot of things and I just gave them like an industry breakdown. And I'm sure if I were to get a normal tip back in the day, it would be 50 or 100 bucks. Yeah. But I just gave them persuasion and marketing hints. And I was telling them, hey, this was wrong. This copy's wrong. Here's a video. You know, I'll tell them everything that was wrong, but I said it in the nice way that was correct, that they could take action on. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason why I got $1,000 tip was because I over-delivered in terms of value. True. And even with my coaching clients, when they think, hey, I'm going to pay $1,000 for a year, they think it's a lot of money because they're only making so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you have to plant the seed. Hey, the first year it's going to be $1,000. The second year it's going to be $10,000 because the one thing is, once I'm helping a guy make $100,000 a year, you know, giving me 10% isn't going to be a lot if I'm going to get them to earn a lot more, or if we're going to spend a lot more time digging into the details. Like if they're a huge company that's selling globally and they're selling 1 million widgets, it's $10,000 consulting fee isn't a big thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think people have underestimated or gone, the pendulum has swung really far to the niche, like really niching in information and things like that. And I remember Tim Ferriss on his blog, he talked about in the future, and he wrote this probably 5 years ago, but how the generalist was going to be really valuable. And that's what I hear you saying is like, you see a wide range of different types of companies and you talk to all these people and you're kind of doing some research about different people you're going to meet with by reading different books and reading really wide, different types of companies, different industries, and you're able to cross-pollinate these ideas and that becomes really, really valuable to your clients.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that you mentioned Tim Ferriss. I don't know if you mentioned that because you read my website or did more research, but I performed for Tim Ferriss before he became famous on his first book launch party. Every time he's published a book, I think for every book he's done, he's hired me, I think, for every one of his parties.
That's cool. He's here in Austin now. He just moved to Austin.
Very funny because when he first jumped on the New York Times bestseller list, he had, I think, a little party. And everyone who showed up to the party was people who bought 100 or 1,000 copies of the book. Because they were either coaches or something. He somehow told them if you were to show up, if you bought this many things, you'd get exclusive to my party. So people flew in from all over trying to learn wisdom from him. And that was the most boring of his parties. The rest of them actually came out crazy because he was already famous. And that 4-hour work week, when he launched that first book, everyone just bought copies of that and there was no one there. But the next parties, he had Paula Abdul, he had FBI agents, chess champions, and a slew of other people there that were really influencers. And these guys were off the charts geniuses at the subsequent parties.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it was really a really cool thing to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, Daniel, I got to ask, are you by chance, would you happen to be coming out to Austin for South by Southwest next month?
I don't know if I might put that on the calendar. I've always heard so much about it, but my guest calendar has kept me pretty busy. Let's talk about it afterwards and maybe I can.
I think it'd be cool. Yeah. I mean, it seems like a lot of your people are here. It'd be, mm-hmm. seems like it. I don't know. I didn't know if you had any already booked things or what, but a lot of your tech people are here. Yeah. I mean, it's a 2-week long party for sure. So. But well, we're kind of at our time, and it's Valentine's Day as we're recording this, so we should probably say hello to our wives at some point.
yeah,
and
we're getting a nudge.
Yeah, so
text nudge.
Jonathan, I'll let you wrap up. Daniel, this has been amazing. I think, you know, we could talk about this all night, the three of us. And you got, as advertised, you've got the energy and the, thanks for some cool little tricks. And you're a really cool guy, cool magician, cool master magician, marketer. What was the third thing? Magician, marketer,
mentor.
And mentor.
And pickpocket.
The pickpocketing I still do. I've got videos of me pickpocketing Jason Mayhem Miller of Bully Beatdown. Uh-huh. I've got pickpocketing people, sheriffs, a ton of people that I do a lot of pickpocketing for. But I don't emphasize that as much because I want to be a sophisticated high-end event brand. If you don't want to bring people in to say, hey, you're a pickpocket. First of all, it makes it a lot harder. Second of all, when you're working really high-end events, you do it once and you become legendary. And then they're like, do it again, do it again. And they're like, maybe later, or you hire me. I like iPhone tricks right now with everything where tech's going. But let's come back. I want to have my son in on one of these persuasion things. He's been begging to jump in, but I was like, nope, he still sounds like a kid. I'm going to coach him out and we're going to get him to do some magic tricks for us. Let's follow up maybe in like, 2 years or a year and,
should do it we'll again.
Follow back and see where we're at.
Yeah. That sounds great. We'd love to have you back on, Dan. And I want to mention your website. People can find you over at danchanmagic.com. A lot of cool videos over there. You can check out some of the stuff that he's done, from corporate events to all sorts of parties. I mean, and some of your clients, man, I got to mention, you know, talked about earlier, you got A to Z you could mention. I mean, you got Airbnb, BuzzFeed, Cisco, eBay, Intel, all of those that you've worked with. So check them out, and we'll be posting the link to your website on our show, and have a great weekend.
Okay, thank you.
And to all of our listeners, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. Check us out on all of your podcast platforms. John, we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Sean.